Slacker Podcast. Phil Tiger. Slacker Podcast. Hello, Slackers. I hope your faces are pinched with winter and your scarves match your mittens. My name is Phil Taggart and this is the Slacker Podcast, a weekly podcast with the finest of musicians passing by for a chat and also to share their first ever demos. I think I'm getting pretty good at describing what the podcast is succinctly now. It has only taken me about 7 episodes, so yeah, I got this. Happy days. Also, if you're listening, you're lucky that this isn't like one of those scratch and sniff radio things. I don't even think that even exists. I've got a bit of a nasty cold on me. I can feel it coming on you. That sort of dry cough you've got for a bit, where you feel like you've got like sandpaper throat. It's coming on, and I am not fucking looking forward to it in the slightest. But I hope you're currently well. I hope you're all good. And as always, a lot of love to the regulars out there on the Slacker Podcast, and special shouts out to the people who have joined the podcast in the last couple of weeks, specifically the people who have joined us for our guest Leon Bridges this week. I can see quite a bit of binge listening going on the podcast, which is really cool. So some people are coming on, finding it, and then going back and listening to the podcast before, which absolutely is amazing. And that is the reason why the Slacker Podcast has reached the top 10 of the podcast chart again last week. So thank you to all of you who have been rating and reviewing it. And if you've got a second and you haven't done that yet, and say you've got Apple Podcast and you're listening to it, then do me a favor and give it a wee go on that. Also, if you're Android and the mood takes you, then it would be amazing if you could do that. Last week, I was recording my introduction with a massively bust face. I had a black eye. It was absolutely rank. You know when your black eye starts off and it just looks like a wee mark and it's not going to get too bad? Yeah, it got huge and green. And the only good thing about it was Halloween landed in the middle of the week, so it looked like I'd put on a load of makeup for it. Last week, I thought, I'm going to sound really nasal because I was playing football, Sunday League football, for the mighty Western Wanderers, my first ever game with them, and 45 minutes into it, cracked me face off somebody, and I'm going to retire now because that's what you do. Once you fall off the horse, what's the advice? You don't get back on. You sell the horse and you buy a motorbike. How about that? A couple of little updates before we get into the podcast today. This week, coming on November 9th, I am recording the first ever live Slacker Podcast, which I'm mad excited about, with a band called You Me at 6, and it's happening at the BBC Introducing Live event at Tobacco Dock in London. The BBC Introducing Live event is happening over 3 days next week in London, the 8th, 9th and 10th of November. So if you produce music or you make music and you take it really seriously and want to make a career at it, then you need to get yourself a ticket to that bad boy. I'll be down doing lots of demo feedback sessions, the live podcast, various different bits and pieces. You can get the tickets from introducinglive.co.uk. Then following Friday on November the 16th, I'm back in Northern Ireland. I am putting on 4 bands at a Slacker live gig at the Atlantic Sessions in Portrush. I've got All Twins, I've got Brand New Friend, I've got Son of the Hound, I've got Susie Blue, and it's all happening at the Atlantic Bar in Portrush. Tickets are £15, and I will put a link to the tickets for this and BBC Introducing Live below in the show description. Okay, so this week's podcast was recorded way back in April of 2018. It's taken a wee while to get here, but finally it has arrived. It is with a modern maverick twisting an old school sound. His name is Leon Bridges. He has the voice that puts millions of people at ease as soon as they hear it. I was one of the first to play his music on the radio in the UK, maybe the world, I'm not sure, but I was on it pretty fast. And all I know is I have a massive amount of respect for this guy. He was discovered singing at open mic nights in his hometown of Fort Worth in Texas while he was bussing tables. They always say bussing tables in America, like we here in the UK really know what that means. I think that just means like clearing up tables. I'm not really quite sure. Also, he is a sharp dresser. He's got a sharp wit. He's an incredible singer. He is a total OG. This week's Slacker Podcast with Leon Bridges in 3, 2, 1. Mr. Leon Bridges, hello.
Hello, hello.
Welcome to the basement in Soho.
I like it, man.
It's nice. as I said to you when you came down, it's like as a nice little icebreaker, nobody could hear you scream.
Let's get it started.
Yeah, exactly. How are you, man? How's things?
I'm good, man. Just got back from Australia, went home, and now I'm here, played a show last night, and it's great, man. I'm excited. Got a new album that'll be out May 4th called Good Thing, and
amazing.
And it's all good.
How was the show last night? How did the new songs fit into the set?
Oh man, it was great, man. We haven't had that much rehearsal. I got some new guys in the band, and so that was just, yeah, everything's kind of early on, but everything felt great. I feel like with the new stuff, it blended well with the old jams, and the crowd was very responsive to it.
You're not like James Brown, are you? Like one of the new guys, like flubs a note, drops his guitar, and you just like turn around to him, and go, "I'm docking your wages."
No, man. You know, it's like, I'm definitely not that. But I did fall down on stage, and that was intentional. It, you know, it's part of the whole thing.
Oh, it's part of the whole thing.
Yeah, as soon as the song's in there, da 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 da, fall down. You know,
he's like, he's not getting up. This guy's not getting up.
Oh my god, he pulled a Beyonce.
It's crazy. Like, I've heard some insane stories. Like one of the guys from Lynyrd Skynyrd used to like turn around and punch people in the band when they used to get stuff wrong.
Wow.
Van Morrison used to fine people and punch them when they used to get stuff wrong. I think like, in the 60s and 70s when you were making music, that was kind of like, that was just okay. That was part of the job. I can't imagine that flying now.
Oh, that's horrible. I mean, like...
Yeah. But, like, it's a good story, but at the same time, you're just like, no, you can't do that in 2018.
Yeah, exactly, because then it's like a mean punch back. You know what I'm saying?
I want to like, play a track, right? Like, just everybody that comes through, I want to play, like, their earliest ever demo.
Nice.
And it's kind of like strange because normally the earliest demo is like a scratchy little piece of music that they're ashamed of and they don't want getting out into the world, whereas your first demo ended up on the album.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like the thing that kicked everything off for you. Mm-hmm. So we're gonna like hear a little bit of Coming Home right now.
Beautiful.
Coming home to your tender sweet loving, you're my one and only woman. The world needs a bitter taste in my mouth, girl. You're the only one that I wanna be around.
It really stemmed from that track. It snowballed massively. Like when you were recording that, surely. What's going through your head now probably wasn't going through your head then.
Definitely not. Yeah. Yeah, man. I mean, my intention was to create what felt good to me at that time, and recording it. And you know, when we finished that whole album, you know, we were just like, hey, let's just put it on some CDs and pass it out at open mic and that kind of vibe. But when definitely went farther.
It did, like, yeah, especially like it's amazing what can happen when you like stick like something up on SoundCloud and just watch it blow.
Yeah, man, that's the beautiful thing about the internet, man.
Like, exactly.
You can just throw some music on there and people can dictate if it's good or not.
Yeah, you go to bed one night and then you wake up the next morning and you're like, what's going on with
this? That was like literally my situation though. You know, like put it on SoundCloud and I didn't know what was going to happen. And the dope story, I was with my saxophone player Jeff Daisy and we drove from in Fort Worth to New Orleans. And it was dope. We kept checking how many plays that we had on SoundCloud, and it just kept growing.
It's really crazy, that, isn't it? Like, I just think that like it's the same as like when a CD or something would like go about years ago. Like when a band like the Arctic Monkeys from like the UK, like, this is like sort of before SoundCloud and all that. We were just like illegally burning those CDs off and just giving them to our friends because.
Totally.
And like they ended up becoming massive the same way you did. It's just a different format. People will always find a way to like share the music that they absolutely love.
Yeah, I always wonder how people like got discovered. how did you get discovered without the internet back then, you know?
I mean, how did you, like, I don't know, I'm not old enough to know, but like, how did you do it in like 1965? Was it just going out on those tours?
Or even like 1990? You know, like, how?
Yeah, exactly. Man, radio, that's it.
Yeah.
And like, radio still has a big part to play in that. Like, it's a different part to play now in 2018, but it's still got its part to play. Radio was a big focus for you growing up as well, wasn't it? Like, you weren't really like an albums, CD sort of buying kid, were you?
I wasn't, because I wasn't allowed to. But yeah, my mother was, she was very religious, and so she,
what would she have done if she had to like find you with like an Eminem album or something like that?
Oh man, probably would have kicked me out the house or something like that.
It's so hardcore, isn't it?
But yeah, she was really into a lot of gospel music, and so that we, when we were with her, that's what we would listen to. And so like, while she was gone at work, I just turned on the radio and I listened to local radio, and it was dope hearing guys like Ginuwine and Nelly and R. Kelly on there.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was dope. You know, I miss like that whole experience of like anticipating that certain song. You know, you hear it and you wait for it to play again.
Exactly. It's like trying to predict the playlist of whatever radio station is you're on. Can you remember like hearing your first swear word in the song? Because like, listening to music like that must be weird, but then hearing somebody actually just like, yeah, effing and jeffing, because that's not even coming through the radio.
Man, yeah, it goes back to when I first heard Eminem, and I had never heard any music like that vulgar. And
yeah,
I had
yeah.
spent the night at a friend's house, and he put on some Eminem, and I was like, I feel guilty listening to this. My mom probably, she can feel it.
But you sound like you've got Catholic guilt. Like I've got Catholic guilt in me.
Yeah,
exactly. You got Irish Catholic guilt in you.
Christian
gospel
guilt. Yeah, gospel guilt.
But like that
still.
That was man. Like me too. It stays with you, and it will be be totally with you to the day that everything darkens. Like, it's crazy. The Eminem thing though, like I had this cassette with Real Slim Shady on one side, and I think it was Mushrooms on the other side, and the track was, I didn't mean to give you Mushrooms, girl. I just wanted to bring you to my world or whatever, right?
Yeah.
But I didn't know that, like, at that tender young age that I was listening to it, that he was talking about drugs in it. I thought that he was just, like, talking about, like, giving somebody some, like, lovely, tasty mushrooms.
Yeah, <exactly. laughs>
And I was listening to it on a four-hour car journey back-to-back, only two sides, flipping it round, and my auntie and mum going, what is wrong with this kid? He's singing about mushrooms.
The innocence, man.
What's it like growing up in Fort Worth? Because I spent a little bit of time in Texas a couple of weeks ago, and I was in Austin, Texas, and I feel like Austin, Texas is like completely different to the rest of it. Like, Austin's very, very liberal, very big music town.
Mm-hmm.
What's Fort Worth like?
Yeah, I mean, growing up, I was very, very sheltered. For me, you know, I mostly stayed home because, once again, growing up in a religious household, I wasn't able to go to parties and that kind of thing. But I mean, Fort Worth is it feels like a small town, but big city, and there's only like certain pockets of culture. But yeah, it's a lot of conservative, old
people, yeah,
you know, but yeah, it's, of course, it's everybody, but like, yeah, it's home to me, and you know, it's great to be able to tour and get back to a place that's just like, it's quiet, it's not a lot going on.
I think you find a lot with artists who are good songwriters and good narrative songwriters as well, like, you know, they can write a story from beginning to end in a 3-minute pop song, which is actually way more difficult than anybody who doesn't write music will understand.
Yeah.
But it's normally the shy kids end up being the best songwriters, I find, because they've had a whole lifetime living in their own head, painting these like narratives. Is the sort of same with you? Like, you kind of had all these stories going on, and maybe finding music was the way to sort of let that out.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I was really big on dance, and I had to leave, and I studied that through college, and I had to leave college to pick up a second job to support my mother. And so in my downtime, that's all I could do. You know, I couldn't get in a dance studio and do that kind of thing. And so in my downtime, I was just picking up a guitar and writing songs. And for me, I just wanted to really create stories that were, you know, about my family and just like just simple love songs.
I kind of feel like you've got the whole package. You can write music, you can sing music, and you can dance. You can dance as well.
And I got to get into some acting recently as well.
Exactly. Where, like, if the music hadn't have taken off and the dancing had, where would you be now? Like, where would you want to be now?
Man, where would I be? I mean, I had ambitions to be a bar.
Are you going to be like dancing behind Britney Spears at Las Vegas?
If I wasn't doing this, it'd be nice to be a, you know, Usher's backup dancer or something like that. You know, if this didn't work out, I was going to probably go out to California and just pursue the whole dance thing out there.
Like, I find that all those things are so inextricably linked, really. Like, dancing, it's all entertainment, it's all showmanship. Yeah. Which order do they come into you? Singing, guitar playing, dancing?
Yeah, for me, it's dancing, singing, guitar playing. I mean, dance for me is just like, it's something that I do all the time. You know, I could be at the grocery store and I'm pop locking aisle 5. You know, and then of course singing is second. I mean, I wouldn't call myself the greatest singer, but I just do my own thing with that. And guitar playing, I wouldn't call myself a good guitar player. But
do you think the guitar is like a means to getting your songs out there more than it is?
It
like,
is. Yeah. You know, I only know 3 chords on it, and
3 chords and the truth. That's all you need to know, isn't it?
All you need. But yeah, it's a great tool to be able to write.
What sort of music's the best, like, to dance to? Like, all types of music. Are we talking classical? Are we talking disco? Are we talking hip hop?
Man, I love it all, but my favorite stuff to dance to is trap music, man.
Trap music?
Yeah.
Like modern trap music, like drill and
yeah,
stuff?
Yeah, modern trap music.
I don't even know how you dance to that, apart from like I'm Irish and I've got no rhythm in my bones.
I can teach you. I mean, like, so a little story about Dallas hip-hop culture. There's this style that it's called boogie movement. Oh. It's called boogie dancing, and and you might know songs like Stanky Leg or My Dougie.
Yeah.
That came from out of there. And so it's a style of dance that it's a lot of, we call it body rocking and grooving, that you can do the trap music.
So, like, is the, like, you know, the sort of Millie Rock and the dab and stuff, is that all born out of that?
Man, definitely not born out of Dallas, but I would say that boogie dancing is the, like, origin of all that stuff.
Please tell me there's going to be some sort of, I know there's, you're dancing in one of your recent videos, but like, I almost want to watch like a 30-minute version of you just like dancing away to all this sort of stuff.
Oh, dude, yeah. That's the next video.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Oh my God, you're going to inspire a lot of dancers as well.
Dude,
as
I
got to
get your
guitars.
Contact, because I will send you videos of this stuff and you'll be like, okay.
Yeah, I'm hooked. It's really odd, right? Because I was saying, like, you know, I'm from Ireland, and like, we're not, like, not a nation like notorious for our dancing, but I come from a town which is like 20,000 people, and we had a breakdancing crew in it. Like, growing up, they'd be a couple years older than me, called the Bad Taste Crew, and they were I think they won awards worldwide and in Europe as the best breakdance crew. Like, they were going out traveling all over the world doing their breakdancing, and they're from a tiny little pocket of a valley in the middle of Northern Ireland. And I think that's testament to, like, when you've got flip all to do.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that's kind of testament of why, like, even in sports and, like, you know, a lot of those guys from those small towns and, you know, just be, like, freaking super awesome athletes and, you know, it's crazy.
Speaking of the singing, right, like, you did a lot of singing in school in between the dancing. Like, I think the cafeteria was a place that you kind of used to hang out and sing quite a lot.
Oh, totally.
How does that work? So, like, imagine, like, I'm a student, I'm in studying politics or something, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm, like, going up with my dinner tray and I'm, like, I'm going to order American things. Tater tots and...
totally.
Yeah. And what, are you, like, in the corner... singing?
Yeah. It's like it's at least, a lot of times it'd be at least like 20 people in the corner, just like singing and being very loud. And so you got people in the cafeteria doing their thing, and we're just singing about food, you know. That's how it started for me, like, because that's the easiest to sing about if you're gonna like improv, you know. Just yeah, like, I want my sandwich, chips on the side. And that's how I started. That's how, like, that sparked the whole songwriting for me.
I think if I was like an advertising guy and like walk past, I'd be like, oh my god, this kid, we need to get him in to sing jingles,
dude. I'd love to get in some damn jingles, like, for real.
Like, but like, it means that, like, in a lot of schools you wouldn't have that inhibition to get up and sing because people would go, you know, shut up, sit down, or and stuff like that. But I feel like this is almost born out of the gospel culture of, like, you know, getting up and singing and being really proud of your talent and sharing it with the world. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, and I think there's something about, like, I don't know, just that, just having community and being able to be a part of something. And that's kind of what it was for us. I mean, like, you got it. You know, a lot of those guys, a lot of us going through class and all that, you know, stuff. And that's our chance to just let loose and just have fun.
What's a gospel church really like? I ever since I've seen it in the movies, I've always wanted to go to it. Like, I've been to America a couple of times in the last few years, and it just looks like the best way to celebrate religion. It seems so full of joy.
Yeah, there's different sides of it. I mean, you got your traditional gospel churches where, I mean, there isn't any, I mean, where it's only like piano and singing. And then you got the other side of it, which is like on a huge level. Look at guys like Creflo Dollar and T.D. Jakes, where it's just like super huge. Like, it's almost like going to a freaking arena to hear the word. But
I want to go there, and I really want to experience it, because, like, I grew up Irish Catholic, which meant every Sunday I went to church mass. It's called, and it would be hellfire and brimstone. There would be like an old priest standing up there, like on the pulpit, lecturing at you, going, if you do this, you'll go to hell. Yeah, totally. If you do this, you'll go to hell. Totally. Your version seems like way more fun.
It was cool. I mean, growing up in the church, we went almost every Sunday, and we moved around to different places, but there's all different types.
I feel like you're in your Sunday best 7 days a week.
7 days a week.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
You don't dress down.
I dress down, but it's...
I can't imagine you in a tracksuit now, because I've seen you for like a couple of years, and you're just always fly. Like, you're always there.
I mean, like, I like to wear sweats, you know. I like that vibe. I do it every now and then. You know, if I'm going through an airport, I might throw on some sweats, or when I'm chilling at the crib, and if I want to be incognito.
I bet you don't get recognized when you're wearing sweats than you do when you've got the
a little less. Yeah, you know, when I'm wearing sweats, even when I put on like a ball cap, you know, I've tried that before, and people still recognize me.
Recognize it's the strut more than it is the look. Maybe
it's just it's just strut.
It's the vibe. It's the vibe you give off. I hope that a lot of people who listen to this podcast are like aspiring musicians. Mm-hmm. And people who want to sort of find their own way through music. And I think, like, there's always a certain romance in those, like, difficult times. Like, now looking back in it, when you've gone ahead and done quite well. Mm. What were the first couple of years of writing your own material and sort of getting to that space like at the very beginning?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, you know, I was just focused on I had a friend. He told me. He said, "Just keep writing, you know, material."
Yeah.
And so, you know, I just write songs and I test them out in front of people at open mics. And so, I was doing everything from open mics to busking out on the streets. And I wasn't doing it to really get like discovered. You know, it's just
urge.
Yeah, you know, just wanting people to hear me in whatever capacity. But yeah, it was just.
Because a lot of people will think that, like, it's almost like an overnight success with coming home. Because, like, you kind of come out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. But there was actually years of toil and tribulations and playing those like open mic nights and trying to get heard beforehand. Like, was there ever a point where you thought, this just might not happen?
Yeah, I didn't really see past, you know, seeing the future. You know, it was just like, you know, for me, I was just taking it day by day, and I didn't think that anything would really come out of it. You know, I was just passionate about, you know, if I could finish writing a song, a whole song, you know, then I'd be content, you know, with that.
I think that's quite difficult for a lot of people, is actually finishing writing a song. Cause like,
and it still is.
Yeah, exactly. But like, I'm sure you've got like lots of people like now that will encourage you on to finish the track when you're sitting like in your bedroom with your guitar and you've got like a verse and a chorus. You're like, and now what?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's kind of complicated to, you know, when you're writing and to kind of finish a whole like concept, you know, like you could write one verse and then, you know, there's just like many ways that you can go about it. And that's, you know, the fact that it's so broad, you know, of what you could put in a song, it's, you know, kind of complicated.
Who are you pinching bits off? All artists pinch music off other people to get themselves started. It's like the petrol that you put into a car for the first time, just to get it going. And then when it gets going by itself, like, you can start writing in your own voice.
Man, I honestly, I'm inspired by everything. Like, you know, I could pull from a Willie Nelson song, and I can pull from...
You're showing your text inside on you now.
Oh, yeah. You know, I could pull from Busta Rhymes, like, and throw that in a song. But yeah, I pull from everything.
Like, you love hip-hop, right?
Yeah, I love it, man.
Do you prefer hip-hop to any other genre? I know, like you say, your favorite music to dance to is trap.
Yeah, I would say that what's, you know, frequent on my, you know, listening is definitely hip-hop music. But, of course, you know, I would say that it depends on kind of what mood I'm in, you know, to what I listen to.
Yeah, same here. Like, I love hip-hop music, but I like punk music. I like quite electronic, sad music. I like lots of different stuff. What do you think of, like, the modern, like, hip-hop scene, like mumble rap?
Yeah.
Like your Lil Xans and Lil Uzi Verts and all the Lils.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all the Lils.
Yeah, what do you think? Because, like, I'm sort of conflicted. I'll go through a period of thinking one artist is quite good at what they do, and then I'll listen to some of the mumble rap stuff, and I'll be like, this is awful, because you hear proper hip-hop afterwards, and you're like, it's just not as good.
Yeah.
But then I change my mind all the time. Then I like it, and I don't. Then I like it, and I don't.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I mean, a lot of that stuff can be repetitive. Not saying that it isn't good.
Exactly.
And I would like to see some artists take that whole genre, but kind of switch it up and switch up the flow and kind of make it fresh, you know. But honestly, like, once again, it depends on the mood.
I can see you singing on so many different things, and I can see you, like, doing so many different things musically. I just don't think that your voice would be the perfect one for something so statistic.
Man, you'd be surprised.
You reckon? You got those bars in you?
You'd be surprised, man. I think I could get down.
Give you a beat. See how you go. Can you freestyle?
Man, a little bit, man. I mean, that's all. I'm not that good at it. I used to be better, but I can freestyle.
Go on then. Do I need to drop you a beat?
Maybe.
I don't have a beat.
I can make up something though.
If you want to, if you feel comfortable with that, then go for it.
It's gonna be so simple. Okay. Okay.
You know you, yeah, don't you want? And baby, come over, wanna lay down like you never had. Baby, I know you're sad, so you wanna come down to Fort Worth in Texas. And baby, we can get down, yeah.
Yeah, man, that was amazing. That was really good.
It was simple.
That was, you just laid down the sweet 8 bars on the show there. Watch the hip hop calls just come flooding.
The hip hop calls. Call you. But actually, I have a collab with this artist named Dej Loaf from Detroit.
I love Dej Loaf.
Yeah, and the song is so dope, honestly.
What was her big track? Try. Yeah. I was playing that on the radio about the same time.
Oh, dope.
As Coming Home. Maybe a little bit after, I think she might have dropped it. But she's incredible.
Yeah, we kind of, both of us kind of came out around the same time. But yeah, she's another label mate, so.
That's cool, man. You did some stuff with Amine as well, didn't you?
I did, yeah, yeah. I did a song on his album called Sundays, just some like vocal, some little background stuff.
And that is the halfway point of this week's podcast. If we could sing the whole podcast, I think we would. I don't even think it would get old. It would get old if I was singing it, but not if he was. I love how open he is just to breaking into song, just generally. You kind of get the vibe from Leon that irregardless of success or of people being into him or in the room, he would just be belting out the notes by himself. He'd be on a park bench somewhere singing to the pigeons. He just was born to sing, and we're definitely here to listen to him. I'll keep it brief as well as we hit halftime, because if you're new to the podcast and you're enjoying it, I don't want to take you away from it for too long. There are 6 other episodes for you to go back and listen to on this podcast, so definitely go back and check them out if you haven't already. There might be some artists up there that you love already, and there might be some that you don't even know you like. I run this podcast off my own bat, and I'm just about covering my costs. So if you're enjoying it, and instead of me like asking for money and doing what a lot of podcasts do, setting up a Patreon and all the rest of it, I would just ask you, if you enjoy it, to maybe go and leave it a review and maybe share it with your mates. If you're like, tweet about it or put it on Instagram or whatever. But if you enjoy it, yeah, definitely share it about it. It would mean the absolute world to me. Okay, right. Enough of me begging about at the halfway point. Let's go back to our podcast with Leon Bridges.
I want to go back to the open mic nights, right?
Yeah.
Because I've been to so many over the years, because I played in bands and I've done open mic nights before playing bass, and they can be like either the best thing in the world or the most soul-destroying thing in the world, depending on the style of open mic night that you have. They're difficult, aren't they? Or they're amazing.
Yeah, it can be both, man. You know, honestly, I mean, there's times where you feel like you're singing to a wall.
Yeah.
And, you know, that can be hard, you know, to go through as an artist. But, and then there, you know, for me personally, I played at this open mic at this place called Magnolia Motor Lounge, and it had a kind of a built-in crowd. And so if I wasn't at that open mic, I wouldn't even be where I'm at today.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's where you got discovered, wasn't it?
Yes.
By
Austin Jenkins.
Yeah, Austin Jenkins, mm-hmm. from White Denim. Mm-hmm. Wow, like that was that's one of those right places at the right time kind of vibes, isn't it?
It is, man, and it's crazy because like I would literally clock out from my busing tables job at a Tex-Mex restaurant, and I'd go to this spot, and I still have my apron on, my uniform, you know, and I get on.
It looks like it's part of your like stage getup.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Bus boy,
the singing chef.
but yeah, and ended up running into Austin Jenkins, and I mean, because Fort Worth it doesn't have an infrastructure to make it, you know, if you wanted to.
Yeah, you need like everybody in any job. It doesn't matter what job you do, you need somebody that will give you encouragement and help you to that next bit. And then when you get to that next bit, it's important for you to bring somebody up to keep the chain going, I think.
Yeah, indeed. And I've been blessed to be able to, I mean, you know, I have a couple of musician friends, and, you know, everything from bringing them on tour with me to slipping their music in a, you know, to some of my people at my label.
You're not going around open mic nights looking for somebody to to take on tour.
I'm honestly like, I'm always like searching for dope people. Mm. And if they're dope, like if I see some guy at open mic who's dope, you know, get his contact and send it to my A&R. It's like, what do you think about this? You know, I've done that many a times, you know.
That's really good of you, because like I know some musicians might be a little bit like, well, I'm not having anybody else in my label. It's all about me.
Yeah. But yeah, man, I think it's I really don't have any power on that, you know, but
You've got more.
The
than,
little
you've
I
You've got
can
more
do.
Than you know. Well, so like, take me through that moment. So like, I know you've like talked about a lot about it before, about meeting Austin and making the debut record with him. But everything did everything move fast from there, like, or was it like, you know, you worked together for a little bit and then you stuck stuff up and it kind of snowballed from there?
Yeah, man. It went fast, but it was a good pace. And so like, we recorded, threw the songs on SoundCloud, and ended up getting signed, and straight up.
What, dude, like, what's that process like? Like when you go from open mic nights to having lots of different labels looking at you, like they must have turned the charm factor on, like the labels that were looking to, like, well, were you getting phone calls from like heads of labels and stuff like that?
Yeah, man. That was crazy. I mean, to see that labels were interested, and I mean, and ended up, you know, doing a lot of meetings, and at even at one point, I can't even remember his, I'm going blank on his name, but yeah, that was it was really hard to process that, you know, people were interested in signing me.
And they promise, there's a lot of promises that come with stuff like that as well, because obviously it's a bit of a pissing contest between all of the labels about like who can promise the most. And or, but like, what was it like, were you promised like big things, like going, we can get you on this massive tour, we can get you on America's Next Top Model?
it really wasn't that. It was just about a conversation that we had, was just taking the right steps.
Sure.
And for us, it was just like, let's get out and tour, and you know,
simple as that.
That's it. And the dope thing is that we didn't get thrown on a whole bunch of like opening support kind of tours, and that was a dope thing. We just started small and just, and the dope thing is just word of mouth for us, you know.
Like that's the old school way of doing it, and it's almost, I think the music industry in general has kind of gone back to that now, that a band in 2018, if they go on tour, they will be way more successful than they will just sticking stuff up on SoundCloud and Spotify.
Yeah.
You know, you can get like 10 million plays on your streaming and have two people at your show, and it's like way more important to have like 200 people at your show and 20 plays on Spotify, I reckon.
Yeah, and it's dope that the fans have gravitated towards me as a whole. Mm. You know, I see a lot of times where a lot of artists have singles out but couldn't necessarily sell out certain, you know, sell out a
video. Sure.
And that's not even, you know, it's not really that important, but it's dope in my case where,
but there was no real growing pains with you, like with the way that you sound and the way that you did it touring wise and like the way that you look, like everybody knew exactly what you were about from day one. Mm-hmm. Like, do you know, you know, like there was, it didn't feel like there was ever anything needs some, you know, artists will change about and they'll try and find themselves. It was like, this rad dude has these awesome songs, he looks really cool, and like he, like as lots of people had said, they were like, oh, he sounds like Sam Cooke. There's nothing like that right now.
It was I mean, amazing that you know, that people were drawn to that, you know, and just me being me. But it definitely, every, that kind of put me in a box.
Yeah.
That was my whole intention behind going into a newer sound.
Yeah, exactly. And like you've sitting at the precipice now of like the second record when we record this, and already it's really different sounding than before, but I really like it.
Thank you.
Bad News is the track I've been playing a lot on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like New York in the '70s. Kind of sounds like it reminds me a little bit of Bobby Womack, I think, places. Your bass player on that is incredible. Like that bass line is one of my favorite bass lines.
Oh man, yeah! Shout out to Nate. I'm gonna call him Nate M because I cannot pronounce his last name. It's so complicated. But he produced that whole thing.
Mm.
I mean, that's him: guitar, bass, drums. Killer dude. But
what was in your head when you like started writing songs for the album? Was it to purposely do something different, or was it like you were like, I know exactly what I want this to sound like, let's pour it out of my head and onto some acetate?
Yeah, I wanted to, you know, I wanted to make a new sound, and I wanted to really break out of that whole retro tag.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a long process for me. I did a lot of searching to come into this new album. But yeah, the whole intention was just to make something, keep elements from what I did started.
Yeah, exactly. And you don't want to like do like a full on metal album or something like directly after your first album.
But I mean, the funny thing is that before we started recording that, I wrote a whole bunch of songs that were like 80s and 90s R&B inspired.
Yeah.
And which will be out next year, but it was a little bit too far, so we kind of dialed it back. And
so have you got like the next album done already, or like just another project?
I mean, I got a ton of songs, but I have like a small little EP thing that'll be out next year.
That's kind of nice, isn't it? Like you've got a cohesive piece of work and you're going, and this is the stuff that nearly made it, but it's awesome too.
Yeah. I mean, the B-sides are killing.
I want to talk about what it was like to play for Barack Obama at the Ray Charles event. Because like, was Ray Charles a big influence on you, or was it something that people came to you and were like, we like your style, would you like to do this?
Yeah, I mean, of course, Ray Charles is a great and influential. But yeah, they approached me about playing, and they wanted me to do Lonely Avenue, and that's like the only Ray Charles song I know.
You're so, like, yes.
Yeah, that, you know, like that if they call me, I could just go and do it.
You don't have to learn Mess Around on the piano. You're like, I know this, I got this.
And so, yeah, I mean, that was a dope opportunity. I mean, I never thought I could be able to do anything like that.
Were you born in Georgia?
I was.
Surely Georgia would have been the one that you would have wanted to play, no? Out of all of them.
Vocally, I mean, that's a hard one. Especially the time that
it's hard for me. I don't think it's hard for you.
the amount of time that I had to learn, I just had to do something that was easy.
Was Obama still president at this stage, or had he just finished?
Yeah, he was.
He was still president.
He was. Yeah.
Like, is that a big moment for you as an American playing for your president?
Oh man, it's beautiful. And I wish my grandmother was alive to see this. You know, my grandmother had to sneak out of the house back in her mother's house in the 60s to vote. Blacks didn't have the right to vote.
Yeah.
And so it's a big accomplishment for just black people, you know, black people in general and my family. You know?
Yeah, absolutely huge. Like just having Barack Obama in the White House, but for you and like all the people around you in your community being able to do that. I mean, that's a lifetime thing there. Like, that's with you.
Yeah, and I mean, it's...
And he was really digging it as well. I watched the video today.
Yeah, exactly.
It cuts away to him, and because he's a music fan. He is a music fan, and he was, like, bopping his head, and Michelle Obama just going,
It was so dope, but dog, man, that's probably the most nervous I've been in my life.
You wouldn't know it, like, because you went up, and you held yourself together really well, and you had this, like, really... bright kind of greeny yellow jacket that belonged to Ray Charles as well.
Yeah, I was able to visit his studio.
I'll have that.
Yeah, exactly. And he has like a closet in there with like a ton of jackets, and I was like, yeah, I'll take that one.
that's incredible. Like I don't think that this we would be having the same conversation if it was like playing. I don't think anybody would feel bad if you didn't play for Donald Trump.
No, they wouldn't at all.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, a lot of people have turned him down over the years.
Yeah, I mean, understandable.
Yeah, exactly. It was funny when he came into office, because I'm sort of interested bystander, because I'm Irish, but then half of America thinks they're Irish as well. And everybody was like, I'm not turning up to play Donald Trump's thing. But they'd asked him, no, we're not doing it. So he ended up getting a Bruce Springsteen tribute band to play his inauguration.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
You're like, that's a real big thing on how unpopular you are if you have to get a tribute band to turn up.
I mean, I guess good on them, but yeah, just like, it's kind of low.
It's a weird time. Is it a weird time for you in America? Like how you look at America now?
Man, it feels like you know, I'm in a bubble because of all this music stuff. But it is a weird time. You know, it's like, you know, I'm never the one to go too far into politics because I'm just never able to like talk about it intelligently.
Sure.
But yeah, it's pretty sad that we have bad leadership, and you know, all we can hope and pray for is that the right person will come along.
And yeah, exactly. We can all sort of hope and pray for that, and I think it makes life a lot easier for people like for like lots of people, for millions and millions and millions of people, when there are people out there who can really elegantly and frustratingly put the frustration down, like Kendrick Lamar can.
Yeah.
I feel like he does more. He makes me understand what certain parts of America are like more than the news or reading any book can.
He's
kind of like my gateway. He's my window into that world.
Yeah, I mean, I love what he's doing with it, and envy. You know, it's like, and I look at it. That's everybody has a gift, and I would never say that I fear of putting that energy in my music. It's just about doing it the right way.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to give that music that amount of respect. And the thing is, when you put music like that out there, you have to be able to stand behind it completely.
So yeah,
with both feet on the ground. So we're not looking at a political record on this, on the second album, are we?
No, it's not a political record. And not to say that
you're not,
that's
political.
Not in the in the future. But yeah, it's everything from you know, the energy and bad news to having a good time on the dance floor, and
I think you find with a lot of the biggest artists that they take a couple of albums to get the confidence to be able to put themselves out there like that.
Yeah,
it's easier to put yourself out there with your own raw emotions because you're not speaking for anybody else other than yourself. But when you have to speak for a certain amount of people politically, like that takes a long time to sort of be able to cultivate that. That's why you don't see too many like 18 or 19 year old politicians.
Yeah, I mean, like, and I mean, for me, it's like, it all depends on if you can, for you know, for the certain artists that can make that kind of music. You know, not everybody can do that.
I saw your tour dates on your Instagram today. Mm-hmm. It made my eyes water. How many dates that you've got on there?
Yeah, dude.
It took two posts.
Dude. You know,
the first one, it was like, I don't know, I felt like I was like reading through Lord of the Rings or something.
Dude, like a whole damn essay.
Yeah. And then it was like, okay, that's first Instagram. And then the second one was like, oh, here's the Europe one. I'm like, holy shit, man, that guy is going to be on the road,
dude,
all year.
Man, like I always say, it's like, man, I'm going to freaking work the hardest I've ever worked this year.
Was that like, that was your choice to be like, be out on tour that much?
Man, if it were up to me, I'd probably just like stay home in my bed and sleep.
I think we'd all do that.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's important, you know, and of course I love playing shows, and it's important to get out there and promote yourself.
Yeah, exactly. You gotta do it. Do you like touring? Is it fun for you?
I love it, man. There's, you know, it's a dope camaraderie about being with your people that you love on the road.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, got a great band, and everything from playing the shows and turning up after the shows and meeting dope locals and really experiencing the culture, you know, everywhere you go.
I kind of feel like there's an invisible circus around touring. Like, you will arrive in, like, say one town, say you arrive in like New York or Vancouver or Portland, right? There's an invisible circus that lives in every single town. So you'll go there, say you're like, you've done three dates there over the last couple of years. This random record collector guy will come up, this like promoter that's always there. The invisible circus descends on you when you're in that town. Is that right?
Wait, are you talking about like the...
There's characters that always kind of follow you around, dude, like on tour.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Are you talking about the guys that like show up at the venues with like 1,000 of like the artist photos and
those as well? That's all part that's all part of the circus.
Shane, me and my friends, we always joke about a lot of those guys being what's his name from Lord of the Rings, Smeagol,
because
they're always just like hunched over and like,
sinus Liam.
You got to, man. You got to sign that stuff for the fans, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. And then see it on eBay later. But
I think that's really weird.
Yeah. I love all my fans, though. I'm like, yeah, exactly. I ain't mad at his hustle. Shoot.
It's true, man. Like, everybody's got a hustle to a certain degree, but then there are some people that you're like, are you actually into my music, or do you just want this to make money? And I'm totally fine with that, but then when you get to the ticket touting thing where you put a show up on sale and some dick goes and buys like 10 or 100 tickets, exactly, and then puts them up for like double the price.
Dude, yeah.
I can't stand that.
It's, you know, it's effed up for the people who actually want to be there.
Yeah. Like, a friend of mine, like Kendrick Lamar, put up tickets on sale for like £80. And Arctic Monkeys did the same, put up tickets for £80. And a lot of people were like losing their mind over it quite recently.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of mine just like had a really, really good point that I hadn't really thought of. Mm-hmm. So like, everybody pays $9.99 a month for Infinite Music. You get absolutely everything.
Yeah.
And then that same person will go, artists don't get paid enough. Because unless you're like upper echelon, like 0.5% in the music industry, mm-hmm, everybody's on fairly modest money up until that spot.
Totally.
And then they're the same people who give off when the prices are like £80 for a ticket. Tickets are £80 because they're not selling, they're not making money through releasing music.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We don't really make anything off the whole streaming and that kind of vibe. And we make, you know, our most of our revenue comes from touring, you know. And so, I mean, we'll probably spend a good 80 at the bar every night, but
yeah, exactly. You got it. What's your drink of choice?
I'm big on bourbon. I love tequila,
Kentucky bourbon,
mezcal,
Texan bourbon.
Yeah. I mean, my favorite is like Woodford Reserve, and like
I could see you with a whiskey sponsorship.
Bullet. Yeah, I need a little whiskey sponsorship. Yeah.
Let's make that happen.
Yeah,
I'll get some good old Irish whiskey on.
Put it out.
yeah. What's your dream show? Like your dream lineup? If you could play any venue, play with anybody, we can pull it all in. Put all the favors in. We've got infinite cash and infinite availability on all venues.
Oh shit.
It's all right. You can swear on this. It's fine.
If it was, you know, I think the dream lineup would definitely be, would I be on the lineup?
No, you're not allowed. No, of course you can be on it. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I thought
you're headlining.
Yeah, no, it'd be Kendrick.
Yes.
Chance the Rapper.
Sounds pretty strong already.
J. Cole.
I'm gonna buy all these tickets and put them up online.
And I'm opening.
And you're opening?
Yeah.
That's pretty humble of you. In the words of Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah, yeah.
So, the new album's coming out. It's got a brand new sound to it. I'm like proper psyched to hear the rest of it. I've heard a couple of tracks off it now, but I'm really, really excited to get my teeth into it. Yeah. Why is it called Good Thing?
Well, Good Thing is derivative of the lyric in Bad Bad News. You know, I made a good thing out of bad news.
Good idea.
But yeah, the whole album is, you know, it's about my evolution as an artist. Uh-huh. And the whole, it's super diverse, you know, and so I wanted to make something for everybody.
What's the weirdest instrument you got on there? Have you got like a theremin? Have you got like
what is
like a dog whistle on there? It's gonna set my dog going mental.
I wish. Ain't nothing weird. It's all normal. Yeah, it's all normal. The weirdest thing to me was for the gang vocals in Bad News is me, Austin Jenkins, and Josh Block, and it's just funny. It's us sitting on the couch, and we're just like, let me let though. Why not? And it's just so funny seeing those guys, you know, like, you know, singing these like.
That sounds like you're doing like ad libs for a trap song.
If so, I freaking love ad libs.
I love ad libs. Like,
it's all my mama.
Who does Migos do good ad libs?
Oh, like,
get him, script
like kings of him.
Woof!
I wish I could be a part of that whole session, just like. Fly on the wall.
What goes through my head when I hear ad libs, right, is that they've laid the track down, the beats there, all added instrumentation there. They've got a couple of rappers in the studio. They've just laid down their bars. They're feeling pretty good about themselves. And then they have to go into a studio and listen to it again and then just go, get up!
Yeah.
Screw
Well, I guess that might be the easiest part of the whole thing.
Big time.
And fun, you know.
I'd like you to give me a little tip to some young, fresh band, maybe even to yourself, a couple of years ago before all this went nuts. And a little pearl of wisdom you've learned along the way.
Word. Yeah, I'm definitely not a wise person. But, my advice is just use every moment you can to better yourself as an artist. I wish I could have taken that downtime I had to be a better guitar player or learn more about singing and that kind of vibe. And, just make sure you surround yourself with people who are better than you. I mean, that's the only way to grow. And, love, be about the art and love the art, and everything else will come later.
I think it's really important that, like, you get rid of negative people from you when you're making music and stuff. Like, positivity is always key, but, like, don't confuse negativity and constructive criticism.
Exactly. And it's two different things.
Yeah, big time. Well, Leon, thank you for spending some time with me. And thanks for coming on the podcast. And I can't wait to get my head into this record.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. Good little chat.
What an absolute gentleman. And listen, I know I've gone on significantly about his singing voice, but there's also something very, very, very cool about the Texan accent, which I quite like as well. I'll save you the cringe factor. I'm not going to try and do a Texan accent for you. Listen to me. I can barely even do my own accent at the minute. I'm dosed with a cold, and it's only going to get worse. Next week, speaking of accents, I have got Gary Lightbody, the main man from back home in Northern Ireland. The main man from Snow Patrol. It's going to be me and him. I flew back to Belfast a little while ago to do an interview with him. And we'll hear my accent get way deeper. Anytime I'm around anybody else from Northern Ireland, my accent goes back into the so it is. Hey, Northern Ireland accent, so it is. Much love to you all for listening and supporting the Slacker podcast. Thank you to Jenny and Adam and the people at Soho Radio for the studio time and for all the help. And I will see you again next week for another Slacker podcast.